Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and WNST.net. We're at State Fair. We are in Catonsville. Beautiful, the Ville. Man, are they putting the lawn chairs up out in front of State Fair and in front of Jennings yet? Oh, no?
It's a religious holiday in Catonsville, July the 4th. You'll see Jennings involved. You'll see State Fair involved. It is a high holiday. Obviously, such a high holiday, we've brought Mick and John Lennon in.
We've rearranged the furniture here. Thank you, Evan Brown. We love you. We love your Benedicts. Fraser Smith's here. So I want to get to Governor Schaefer and to the heart
Quick
of...
Quick shout-out before you do
no,
that.
Go ahead.
Next week, right? We're
going to
be with Mayor Jack Young.
Mayor Jack Young at Fadley's.
One of our other great sponsors.
Come on down. It's Thursday morning. We're going to be doing that, and we're excited about that as well. Obviously, we're excited about that.
Look, before you get to Governor Schaefer, I'm going to jump in. We don't mind stepping on each other.
But please do.
Because I want to go Schaefer nonstop to the end in leadership and the folks you've covered. I was fascinated when I was looking up some of your past activities, Fraser, that in a past life, you wanted to understand public housing better. Still an issue today. Here we are, 2019, the need for affordable public housing. And you went and spent a year living in public housing.
Yes.
Correct?
When was
this? Give me the story.
So I have to say to you, who does that?
Well, that's my question. That's why you knew I had to ask that. I want to know about the experience.
I probably wouldn't have done it, but I was teaching a course in news writing at Roger Williams College, which was over on the bay and not too far away from Providence, where I then worked. And I, from teachers and students there, I heard that they were going to have open an urban laboratory in one of the housing projects that was in a lot of trouble. The biggest building there had been shut down for various reasons. Elderly people were living there mostly. They were being victimized by the kids that lived there. The place was out of control. So they closed it, and then they reopened it for the students. And I thought, well, I mean, I can't remember if somebody invited me or if I just thought, why don't I go and do this? It was a little bit crazy, I have to admit. My wife and my then 3-year-old daughter moved in there.
So you took your family into public housing for a year.
I did. And
you could have afforded.
What other reason would there have been?
Right. Okay.
I thought, look, public housing in the country was in a lot of trouble. It started out with all the good intentions. It was pretty much after the Korean War in the 50s, and it was thought to be transitional. People would stay there while they got their legs under them and move on.
Was this sort of the aftermath of the New Deal? Like, what was the next part of the leftovers that didn't get helped by that? Is that
you could look at it that way? But I think it mostly was driven by why there were such housing shortages then. I don't know, but I think it was mostly after the Korean War, a lot of returning soldiers, a lot of poor people in the country, which we had not addressed very much as a society, and there was a need for it. In fact, there was a waiting list in Providence, and so they really did not want to close this building because it probably housed 200 or 300 people or families. But it was not unique. It was happening around the country. And I thought, you know, it's a national story. It's a local story. And so I'll write about it. I'll find out what, you know, one of the things that I thought about, I remember, and it's in the book, actually, is if you grew up in the projects, you had a stigma from the very beginning. It didn't matter who you were. You grew up in the projects. I mean, what happened was that transitional housing was the idea, but a lot of people just settled in there for various reasons. They didn't have skills to make more money, so that. But almost, and there's in my series, there's an interview with a family that I met soon after I got there, which was maybe 10 years after all this began. And they were going through the real estate ads, and I said, "Are you looking to move?" And they said, "Yeah, we really are." And how long have you been here, or how long have you been looking since we got here?
Mm.
And you know, financially, it just didn't work for them. So they were entrapped in many ways because there was a lot of bad behavior there. The cops were tired of responding to calls to come there.
Probably wouldn't respond at times.
And there may have been cases when they didn't respond.
Correct.
Yeah, sure. So there were lots of things. And I had started covering the Johnson's War on Poverty. So I was really kind of immersed in it anyway. And part of what made it less part of what made it less good for me and professionally was that I didn't stop covering my beat. I was, you know, there was always a lot of stuff going on with Progress for Providence, which it was then called. So I wasn't living there 24 hours a day. I was there. I was sleeping there. But I did meet a lot of the kids. Some of the kids had invented their own language.
Wow.
It wasn't really complicated one, but it was their language, and you know they would lapse into it if somebody was threatening them in some way. So, you know, it was a valuable thing. I wrote a 3-part series about it.
I think it was nominated for a Pulitzer.
Yeah, it was. It actually did pretty well.
That's never going to happen for me.
I mean, that's, you know, a pretty modest guy. Just for those of you listening or watching, the piece that Frazier's talking about was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. What was your big... I know Nestor, we're pressed for time. Nestor's hero is William Donald Schaefer. We got to get to that. You're the William Donald Schaefer biography. What was your takeaway about public housing and our commitment to that? What did you learn in that year?
You have to be careful about good intentions. You have to, when you're making policy, you need to know what the what the worst outcome is and be prepared for it.
Knowing how someone will exploit it in some way.
Well, people weren't exploiting it in my experience. They were pretty much trapped by it.
Right.
You got into it and you couldn't get out of it. The transitional part of it didn't work. What would happen then? The buildings were very unattractive. They were sort of, I think of them as blunt, sharp objects all around.
Well, we had those
concrete
in Baltimore for years.
Sure, sure. And I think ultimately Mayor Schmoke got rid of a lot of them.
Correct.
And people should have gotten rid of them. You know, you spend a lot of money. You have an elaborate system of operating them. They're always serving a little bit of their intended use, and yet they fall deeper and deeper into trouble.
Well, and it's so interesting, Nestor, as we jump to Schaefer and Lessons of Leadership. I think every guest, because Frazier said the people are trapped, they become trapped, beware of good intentions, comes back again to economic viability and jobs. And I don't think we've had a guest on yet on Baltimore Positive, when we're looking to try to get the city moving forward again, that hasn't talked about jobs. Like, jobs has been front and center in every conversation.
Well, yeah. And you know, Governor Schaefer, as Mayor Schaefer, has this sheen about him because of the harbor and Harbor Place. And we've talked about, you know, the flight of population at that time and where we are. Part of this is saying, where have we been and where are we going? And I know we talked with Don Fry about that and where the Inner Harbor is. I live at the Inner Harbor. I live right across the street from the Schaefer statue. On cold days, some days I go over and put a little Raven hat on him and put a little scarf around him or take him a cocktail when the Ravens win the Super Bowl or whatnot. I don't idolize
that
him.
That was his genius. I mean, he could relate to you. I mean, we all know this is the folklore, right? He drove up and down the alleys on weekends. He didn't have anything else to do. And if the trash wasn't being collected and if people weren't taking care of their property, he got on them. And if they were, he would send them, he would make them members of the Order of the Rose. I mean, this is one of the aspects. They had rose bushes, or something else that caught his eye. He would write people letters, and I think there was a certificate. you know, I said to somebody,
you're speaking Nestor's language.
These things have to exist and been handed down around here. You know, that the mayor once wrote me a beautiful letter about my rose bush. Someone's granddaughter has that letter, right?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I was talking to somebody about him one day, and I said, were you a member of the Order of the Rose? And he said, no, I wasn't, but I wanted to be. I mean, so that's it. You know, that gets into the air supply about somebody who is on your level. I mean, they understand you, and they know you want things to be good and to work properly. And, you know, I mean, what are the elements of leadership? I want to think about right. this more, Don. I'm so glad you're dealing with it. But with Schaefer, I was always so impressed with the fact that he never doubted his instincts.
Wow.
He knew what he thought, and nobody was going to push him away from that.
Wow.
And he also knew that he did not have to be the smartest person in the room. He recruited people because he thought they knew something he didn't know. One of the
awesome. Keep going.
One of the lucky things that happened to him.
I need coffee. I'm going to be late.
It was so easy for him to get elected, and there was no question that he would get elected. Right, 90% of the people in Baltimore are more than that.
Well, he was almost a king in that way, right? You couldn't beat him.
He knew more about being mayor than most people who are mayor knew when they're done with it. Why was that? Because he'd been on the council for 15 years, and then he'd been the council president. And you know, remember the ads that showed the cameras closing in on City Hall and then coming to a focus on him
yes.
sitting at his desk? Wonderful piece of political advertising. There was nothing phony or fake about it. There's a story in my Schaefer book about young Tommy talking about coming back from the Army-Navy game or something and driving by City
now,
Hall.
Tell folks, young Tommy, who may not know, Tommy D'Alessandro.
Exactly, exactly. And there was there's Schaefer's little car out there with all his bumper stickers all over his car, and he's upstairs doing whatever he's doing. I mean, you know, it was true that he was married to the city.
Right.
He wasn't married to anybody else. You know, he was married to the city. So he was... And I started to say that when it was clear that he was going to be elected, Sally Michael, one of the people that he knew enough to recruit, I mean, her husband was Michael, what's that company? It's air conditioning or something like that.
AJ
Michaels, I guess.
Very wealthy family, but she was one of the city do-gooders. People who love the city that he embraced, he inherited them. He put them all to work.
Now was he?
So he took all the people that loved the city and put them to work. Is that was at the heart? Is that really?
Oh,
what he
yeah,
did?
Yeah. And there were many of them that were. I mean, people were coming down to volunteer. I mean, people had begun to know him, and they knew that he was irascible and demanding, and you know, one of the things that he did was he embraced women at a time when women were not given any responsibility in
wow.
almost anything. And, of course, somebody else had to counter that by saying, well, he recognized a cheap labor force. But, in fact, I think that was true. And, I mean, what do you do in life? You know, you find the access point. And that when with him, that's what he did. And you know, so and also people were very determined to do their best work for him because they knew they were going to see it somewhere. And sometimes it led to bad outcomes. Remember pink sidewalks and, you know, buying a manhole
manhole cover?
No. Problems in the street, you know, potholes.
A pothole.
Oh,
so you could invest.
You
could invest in a pothole, right. Dedicate it to somebody. I mean, you know.
But he wasn't afraid of ideas, and he wasn't afraid to fail.
Never. I mean, he didn't want to fail.
Right.
So you came
in
77,
you know, one of the things he said was, the aquarium has to be first class first day. And this, you know, and then there's that whole thing about swimming in the pool.
Right.
And, you know, and being willing. And, you know, I remember Roger Simon, one of the columnists that came here from Chicago.
Right.
in Chicago, and probably among the political insiders, there's a good example of this, but never get photographed in a hat.
It was a rule I had for everyone I worked for and tried to carry it over into my administration. Don't put a hat on.
Don't put a hat on. Right. Shaver put everybody's
don't
hat on.
Don't get on a tank if you're Michael Dukakis.
Exactly. Right. Well, that's the example I was thinking about, right, with a tank helmet.
Right.
But Shaver, you know, Shaver dressed up as H.L. Mencken. Right. You know, he loved the military. He liked standing up in Jeeps, you know.
Amazing.
Well, why didn't he knew what related to people. He knew how to look at what happened when he died, he was always wanting some kind of a pageant. And there was one at the end, right?
When he
drove and the hearse drove him through the city through the city, and people, black and white, were
amazing
on street corners when he's coming by. So, you know, you had no doubt about what he wanted. You knew that what he wanted was what you wanted. He believed in, he knew, you know, he was very instinctive. He wasn't always the most book smart person in the world. I asked him what he thought about the Coen sisters, the great art collector, and he acted like he never heard of them. And this was political as well. I mean, I think he knew that it was, if you were a politician, don't pretend you know French.
Right.
Don't do something like that, right? Because you're going to lose large numbers of people right away. So he pretended he didn't know who the Coens were. Or maybe he didn't. I just really don't know.
Why didn't it transfer? We're going to have Frazier back on, because we got to talk about all the folks he's covered. I know we're coming up on the clock. I know everybody's got tight schedules. Why didn't it transfer to being governor? You think it did?
I think it did.
But his passion wasn't for the state, from my understanding. My understanding is he never really wanted that gig. He just sort of ascended to it to some degree.
Well, what's
right?
your take? Are we wrong? Tell us why you think it did transfer.
Well, he had some things to overcome. The Baltimore Council, this is something I heard when I first got here. The City Council of Baltimore is the best example, the best argument for the divine right of kings, because they didn't do anything. I mean, the structure was such that nothing they did was important, because he always had 10 votes, and that's all he needed in those days.
Senator Mikulski made that quite clear, didn't she?
Oh, yeah, she said she was Schaeferized.
Schaeferized. She thought she was going to win one day, and she walked in, and she talks about a story where none of the other council members
The highway coming through Canton.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And she said initially she got her ass kicked, and she said, "Now you still see there's a tunnel there."
Right.
So at some point, even losing to Mikulski, they figured it out.
She ended up winning. I mean, they killed the road to nowhere,
right?
And you know, and he didn't often do this. He didn't often have to do it, but he admitted that you know, they buried. I think they symbolically buried the hatchet.
No, they did
under the water.
Yeah, I think they did.
In a tube.
You know, it's interesting, Nestor. You'll, and I'm sure you knew this, Frazier. I was fortunate enough to work with a number of folks who had been in a Schaefer cabinet. Every one of them tells the same story. If the meeting started at 10:30, Frazier's nodding his head for those of you listening and not watching. If the meeting started at 10:30 and somehow you got delayed and you showed up at 10:30 and 30 seconds, the door was shut and locked. You weren't allowed to enter the meeting. So if you had a meeting with Mayor Schaefer at 10:30,
that's the demanding part, right?
Well, I mean, you know, there's
these were cabinet secretaries.
I mean, you know, he wasn't always the most pleasant person in the world to know. I mean, you know, he would accuse Schmoke of going to sleep in the cabinet meetings, which was not true. And, you know, I mean, he did stuff like that. Back to what he knew politically. He knew a lot politically, but he did not want to run against Schmoke. He was afraid first of all, I think he knew he would lose, or thought he would lose. I mean, as it turns out, Schmoke barely beat DuBurn,
right,
as you remember.
Clarence DuBurn.
But, you know, he didn't want to do that. And also, it ended up, as powerful as he was, it ended up not being his choice. I mean, Irv Covens, who was angry at Steve Sachs,
right,
then the Attorney General, who ran against Schaefer in 86, said, nobody can beat Sachs but Schaefer, so you're running for governor. So, you know, politically things were working in that direction, and he owed everything or almost everything to Coven.
One of the old line Baltimore political bosses, right?
Absolutely, for folks who, yeah.
And when we had political bosses, listen, I know we're up against the clock. What, you get a call, whoever the next mayor is, Nesser, whoever it is, many other names, Jack Young, you name it, Brandon, whoever's going to be the next mayor. You get a call and they say to you, Frazier, what are the first two or three things I've got to do to be successful? They call a bunch of people, you're one of them. Say, Frazier, you've covered her for a long time. What do I need to do to be successful?
And is it different now than it might have been 40 years ago? Is the job different now?
Well, the job is definitely different, and who would want the job? That's the question everybody asks, but somebody will want it. And I think that whoever succeeds Young, and even if it is Young, I think people need to do some of the things I just said. Schaefer and his people did. Find the smartest people.
Nestor said it's the first rule. You and Nestor must have been
taught. It's the first rule of life.
One of the things that have been said about former Mayor Pugh is that she did not and could not. She didn't learn to delegate, and she couldn't delegate. So you cannot run a city like Baltimore or Cleveland or Chicago or any city without people that know a lot about what's going on in the city and how to make things work. And things are not going to work if you don't have... Schaefer not only did that, but he deputized people like Hank Buda, who was the boss of the phone company, right? And lots of other people who were
business leaders.
They
right?
were business leaders. He made them a shadow cabinet, and he would go to them and say, and sometimes he would even announce it before he told them that he wanted them to raise money for something. Or there
is that the shadow government that you wrote about.
Yes and no. I mean, that was Charlie Benton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Benton was his numbers guy, and you know he was always watching what Benton was doing. He knew what was going on in the shadow government for sure. I mean, there was no money, and then suddenly there's $100 million in the bank of the city. The city is a bank? Excuse me? How did that happen?
Another award-winning piece by Frazier Smith. We're out of time. We're definitely having Frazier back on. The Daily Miracle.
I don't want to go. Do I have to go to football practice?
I think you got to go out. You got another job to do today. Frazier, thank you. How's the golf game?
I haven't played very much recently, but I'm getting back.
Okay.
I want to get back.
Get back.
Well, you and
it.
I will play, right?
There you go. We're on. What a great day, Nestor. State Fair. We've got our other sponsors.
I haven't even eaten yet.
You haven't eaten. We've got Jennings up the street. We've got Fadley's. We've got Mayor Jack Young next week at
Fadley's.
Kind of
Baltimore positive was this where I didn't even eat.
We got Mick.
You know why I didn't eat? I was too busy talking, right? Literally.
What a great morning.
Thanks
for you.
And I'm sorry I haven't known you for 35 years the way I should have, but you were intimidating to me. You were.
You should have come and said hello to me. I should have come and said hello to you.
You wouldn't have liked me.
I'm not an intimidating guy. I'm really not.
All right, Frazier Smith, everybody.
I was intimidated by intelligence when I was young.
The Daily Miracle coming out in September or October.
We are WNSD.net, AM 1570. Hope to see you at Fadley's next week with Mayor Jack Young on Thursday, the 20th. We are WNSD.net, signing off from Catonsville.